We're going to continue the theme of the mitzvah pruvu, procreation, but we're once again going to tie it into this parasha, and there are multiple ways to do it. The easy way is something we started a few weeks ago, when we discussed, see on rabbihubba.com, and Spotify, YouTube, whatever it is. Now, what we spoke about is what was the source for the mitzvah? Where's the makar? Where's the source for the mitzvah? So we gave, and then we discussed that there was a pasuk to Adam Arishan. We had a nearly identical pasuk to Noach. And then we said that this pasuk, we said, we'll get back to it, applies in this week's parasha. So this week's parasha, 189, it says like this. On the side, God blesses and renames Jacob. We're in 35, chapter 35, 9. And it says, and God appeared to Jacob again when he came to Paddan Aram, and he blessed him. God said to him, your name is Jacob. Your name shall not always be called Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. Then he called him Israel. All easy, Jacob's name for today. And God said to him, I am God. Be fruitful and multiply. In over to the Hebrew side, it's on the fourth line toward the end of the words. Perei 186. Perei urevei. Perei means be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a congregation of nations shall descend from you. So what are these words? Perei urevei. Be fruitful and multiply. So we're not giving a written or oral test of what we did a few weeks ago. What we discussed a few weeks ago was that these words can be understood, not here, but here also. Vir in Adam, vir by Noah, and now again here, they can be understood in two ways. The word be in English, there's no word for it in Hebrew, be fruitful and multiply can be either a command, you are obligated to be fruitful and multiply, will be a command, or it could be a blessing, like you shall be fruitful and multiply. So how do we read the word over here? Will become a great debate in the Talmud. Now, the Talmud says, that's how we started this weeks ago, and we have to know again, what even if it's a command, why here, why now, what's going on, why is be fruitful and multiply relevant to what's going on in the chapter before that?
Now, and how is that different than the Lashon and Bereshis also?
Excellent. So the different the Lashon is this, which we'll discuss right now. In Bereshis, well, in Bereshis, but you meant past Bereshis. In the previous two times that we quoted this pasuk, Pru Ruvu, it was written with the last letter being a Vav, Pru Ruvu, as opposed to here, it's with a hey, pray reve. The real difference between them is, in English it won't make a difference, in plural, pru revu is plural. Be fruitful and multiply is being spoken in the original place by Adam. In the original place by Noah, it's being said to multiple people. Plural. Either, we discussed and we'll discuss again now, multiple men in the screen, Noach and his children, or multiple people by Adam, he had no children yet, it will be Adam and his wife. The debate became, are women obligated in the mitzvah not? That's what we discussed back then. And here one of the rabbis says, in the Mishnah, in the Gemara, says, Rabbi Yosef says, Mehacha, where is the source for the mitzvah? Approvu, this pasuk here, pray urevei. And he says, since it doesn't say pruvu in plural, that's the source that women are not obligated in the mitzvah. If it were to be written plurally, plurality, whatever the word is, then it would be spoken to men and women. But since it's spoken in the singular phrase, it means, Jacob, you be fruitful and multiply. And it's a command form. That's what we're learning right now. Command, men are obligated, women are not. We said last time, just as a reminder, that the ultimate Meshech Chachma, the Ursameach, said the reason why some would rule and that women would not be obligated in the mitzvah pruvu, because it's a dangerous thing for women, even until recently. And the Torah, being as great as it is, does not give obligations that are dangerous. So that's why we don't fast on 2 days. Maybe 1 day is not called dangerous. But anything that's dangerous, you're not obligated to do. Since women, percentage-wise, we don't know, going through a pregnancy, going through a birthing process, clearly until recently was a dangerous situation, a burden beyond comprehension, the Torah cannot command them to do it. So we have a possibility here to say, from this pasuk here, some rabbi in the Gemara says, since it's written as a prey reve singularly, not pru revu plurally, women are not obligated in the mitzvah. Now, the question is going to be, If it's an obligation, what we have to discuss tonight is, what's the obligation to Yaakov? At this point in time, he had a large family of kids. So now you're telling him to be obligated? He fulfilled the obligation already. I don't come over to you at the end of Shabbos and say, by the way, keep Shabbos. You kept Shabbos. Before Shabbos, I'll tell you, keep Shabbos. Before you drink hot tea, I'll tell you, make a blessing. But after someone drinks it, I wouldn't say it today, it'll be irrelevant at that point in time. So what's the reason why over here? Not my question. What's the reason over here? Why, if you want to learn, this is the source. Pray away singularly. Who's obligated in this thing? Because the obligation of approval is what we've said the last few weeks, according to what we rule. But there's a debate: one boy, one girl. Did Yaakov have one boy and one girl this time? He had 11 boys at this time. And how many girls do you think you had? Depends what you want to say.
Dina
for sure. And some Midrashim, not open Torah, that they each one had a twin. Each one had a twin, maybe. But that's not clear. Clearly, the Torah would be 11 boys, one girl. So how would it be now here that it says, be command? Now, by the way, yes.
It says, Yaakov was comforted by his sons and daughters in the plural.
Yes, but that could be daughter-in-laws. That could be called daughters. But yes, another good question. Now, what's interesting is, fascinating, is in Medrash, 99% of the people you're going to speak to do not know this Medrash. But it's a Medrash. That means the Talmud level. The Medrash says, at the beginning of the parasha, that by Yisrael Yaakov Malachim, Yaakov sent angels to Esau. And what does it say? Im Lavan Garti, I sojourned with Lavan. And we have pointed out in the past, that's one of the only places where you will have the word that seems to be 613. There's no source for 613. But the word Garti is 613 spelled out. And it meant I kept the 613 commandments, which meant be afraid. I'm not afraid of you. You're coming after me. Be careful. That's what Rashi says. But that's one medrash. There's another medrash that says mind-blowing. Just coming out in the rain for this alone, it's worth it. We're going to discuss it. The Medrash says that Yaakov sent a message to Esau, and he said, I'm love, I'm guarantee, I kept 613 mitzvahs, minus two. He added on a detail. This Medrash says minus two. Which two did Yaakov not keep? First one it says, and we can give a whole year of classes on this. First one it says, I did not keep the honoring and keeping the parents because I left my parents. A little odd since the parents told him to leave. That's for a different conversation at a different time. And the second one he says I didn't keep was Puruhu. So what we're saying over here, the question is going to be, we're going to answer without an answer right now. We have a cheap thing. We're saying here it says, God says, command, according to one rabbi in the Gemara, command you, Yaakov, not women, singular, in the midst of Puruhu. We ask the question, wait a second, you already fulfilled Puruhu? Say, well, take a step back. There was a medrash that said he did not fulfill Puruhu. So now we got to figure this out. If he did fulfill Puruhu, what's the point of saying, do the mitzvah? And if he didn't fulfill Puruhu, well, that doesn't make any sense. He has 11 boys and at least one girl and maybe 12 girls. Yes.
Maybe the mitzvah's obligation for each and every wife you have. So Rachel only had boys.
So now, okay, keep that in mind. Excellent.
How many wives did he have?
Four wives. So now, according to some, they want to say, it's Yaivitz. Remind me, Yaivitz, Yaakov Emden. Home run. I saw an amazing idea. For a chuckle. You're going to love this, Neil. But it doesn't answer the second one. Answer the first one. How does the Medrash says he sent a letter to Esav saying, I didn't fulfill the mitzvah for Ruhu? What do you mean? He had a daughter, Dina. You know the interaction?
He couldn't tell he had a daughter, Dina, because she was hidden in her chest.
That nap was good.
She didn't want her to know about the daughters.
Just to repeat it for the people on the camera. He did not want to say he had a daughter because he was going to hide that girl from Esav later on. So he couldn't say I fulfilled the mitzvah. So really, according to this answer, he did fulfill the mitzvah. We'll get to soon what it's bringing that. He did fulfill the mitzvah, but he couldn't say he fulfilled the mitzvah because he was going to hide this girl anyway. Therefore, he sent a message. By the way, you know, I never fulfilled the mitzvah. I have 11 boys, no girls. Don't get any thoughts, no girls. No thoughts, no girls. That's what happened. I saw this brought down by a rabbi. I think it's great. Two for two.
That's really something.
That means now. He's not going to answer us now.
Openly lied.
He openly lied. Now, we might have it on the film then. I don't remember now. We definitely had a class once about this, about why was Yaakov punished for not allowing his daughter to marry Esav. Maybe she could have converted him. Did we do that? I don't remember now. But we, you know, there's 300 plus classes. I don't remember how that. But the idea is that here would be that Yaakov early on said, I'm going to avoid this issue. And it means he's thinking ahead. He's thinking ahead. I don't want to get this idea of him thinking stuff. I'm going to send him out with no girl. So when Esav shows up, he's not even asking any questions. He might have heard, yeah, there's rumors. He has a gorgeous daughter. I don't know what you're talking about. You remember what I sent you, the letter 2 weeks ago? Check what I wrote down. What are you talking about? So he was pretend. Unbelievable idea. Which would mean that, according to this interpretation, he was misleading his son, his brother. But again, it comes back to now, why would God command such a thing? So the Yaivitz answers, that we're trying to discuss in this Talmudic passage, since it's written in singular form, whether women are obligated or not, and it's written in singular form to tell you women are not. That's what it's telling you. because the women had not fulfilled it. There were four wives. You need a boy and a girl to fulfill the mitzvah. If women were obligated in the mitzvah, only one girl was produced. That means three wives had not yet fulfilled their commandment. So the Torah is saying, by the way, I want to tell you something. Singularly, Yaakov, only you have the obligation. I'm saying it now to tell you because the girls did not fulfill it if they would have had an obligation. They don't have an obligation. Yeah, I know they have an obligation because I said it singularly. It's a little bit of a circular reasoning. The Ibid says it. Since we're trying to prove that women are not obligated, how do we know women are not obligated? Because I'm commanding the man, not the women, and the women didn't fulfill the mitzvah yet. So since the women did not fulfill the mitzvah, I would have commanded them. I don't command them because they don't have to fulfill the mitzvah. Little circular idea. So again, you have the beginning of the parasha with a wild idea saying that Yaakov says I didn't fulfill it. We have a later on in the parasha discussing a command potentially. But again, you could look at this as a blessing, but a command potentially, why now? So, answer number one on why it would have been a command now is because what occurs right before this, you said one answer. The Gemara says that after the destruction of the temple, the rabbis got together and said, you know what? We're sick of this, God. We don't want this anymore. You know what we're going to do? No more kids. There's no point in producing children that are just going to get killed. We have a similar, which we once discussed, I think, last year, with Amram and his wife, Moshe Rabbeinu's parents. The situation is dire. We're not going to do this anymore. So coming out of this thing, where Yaakov potentially had a world war right now, because Shimon and Levi attacked an entire town, and the world wanted to get revenge, as they've been doing till today, only focusing on the Jews kill an Arab, not focusing the other way around. There was a world war coming. Yaakov just had to say, you know what? I'm looking at this long exile coming up. Not interested. So God will tell him now, blessing or obligation, by the way, continue to have kids, which we do. Because we said then, the Talmud said then, that when they wanted to not have kids, at the end, God said, you got to have the kids. Amram in the end got back together with his wife because of Miriam, because there is the obligation to have kids. But why mention it now? Post-World War. If we said the joke a couple of years ago, not a joke, it's a real interpretation. Why didn't the world defend Shechem that was wiped out? Even Stephen said it. One of the interpretations was, because we're saying the chess game, Yaakov sending a letter, not mentioning the daughter, because he's playing chess. They're all ahead of the game. Why are they figuring out, why is no one doing it? Because what the Jews did before they wiped out the town, you know what they told the town? Have a circumcision and convert to Judaism. Then they killed them all. So who got killed? That famous Nazi when he was about to get hung. What did he say? I wish I converted so we can kill one more Jew. Not that story's even true, but it's an interesting story, right? The Nazis who
converted so I could kill one more Jew.
They were going to kill him. It was either Eichmann or one of these guys. I don't remember which one they said. I don't know if it's true even. But about a couple of Nazi people they said about that. They said, what's your last wish? You want steak? You want wine? No, I want to convert to Judaism. So when you kill me, you kill one more Jew. Some line like that. So the idea here is that was one of the lines. Now, but where's the source for this line? We could say the source of the Torah. That Shimon and Levi had the genius idea. Wait a second. If we wipe out an entire town, it's World War One. Oh, we already had World War I, four kings versus five kings, maybe. We're going to have World War here. So what we're going to do is we're going to have them convert. But it wasn't clear at the time it was going to work. It worked. The world didn't care about dead Jews, if I put it in quotes. So no one attacked them. But Yaakov came out of that saying, listen, this time we got away with it. How many more times are the non-Jews going to fall for this trick? We're in for an eternity of wars. Not interested. God says, don't worry. I give you blessing, command. We're not going into that detail for this interpretation. And figure it out and have more kids. He was first.
I never understood how the five kings could rebel against four kings for 7 years and then another 6 years until we just watched Syria. They had a 14-year world, for 14-year war for 14 years.
Getting nowhere.
This faction going against this faction, and going nowhere. Then it happened in
one
week.
Second.
Beautiful. I never got it until 2 days ago.
What? Excellent. Excellent. Put the current events.
Like each of the kings is a faction. This front, that front, this front.
And it just happened. No explanation. No one sees it coming. What was your question?
So where did Shimon and Levi have this epiphany to all of a sudden wipe out a city?
That's a whole conversation not for now. But they did what? No, it wasn't an epiphany. They kidnapped the sister of theirs. Got to be serious. They kidnapped a sister. So they felt that the punishment is a death battle. So therefore, the punishment is we stand up for Jewish blood. In fact, the Targum Yonis, I think, says that you should never embarrass Jewish women. You have to be extra careful. That was what they said. They told their father, we did it. because Jewish women forever should understand how important they are and how valuable they are. Because we're not a sexist nation at all.
So you're saying if you have one male job, one female job, you fulfill the mitzvah. But that, like, discourages people from being fruitful.
Excellent. Let me tell you what the Yavetz first says. You jumped ahead of him. The Yavetz says, here's a question. What's going on? He's the one who asked the question. What is going on? How do you have an obligation, according to some, puravu, go produce children? He already produced children. So what's the obligation? Don't tell a guy at the end of Shabbos, go keep Shabbos. So the Yavetz first says, before the second answer, first says, I'll tell you what it is. There's a theory in the Gemara, Rabbi Yeshua, I can't remember right now. No, that's Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua, the Gemara that says, no, even when a person has children, oh, came up on the spot. How do you like that? Is it? Rabbi Yeshua. Oyma, Rabbi Yeshua says, Nasa, Ida, Adam, Isha, B. This is on 62B. The other one was 65B. Rabbi Yeshua, Oyma, Nasa, Adam, Isha, a person should marry a woman, B'yadusai, when he's young. Hello? Or Risa Isha Mizeknusa. He should still marry her when he marry another one when he's older. If the person had children when he's young, have more children when you get old. Now, the simple interpretation of this is it's like a Musar idea. Keep on trying, and the Gemara says you never know who will be successful, who will be the winner, but it means continue to have children as much as you can. The Zohar says that everyone gets upset at 120 and they're asked, you should have produced much more children. Now, the Yavetz first says, what does the Gemara here say? Yaakov produced children. He already had 11 boys and one girl. He fulfilled the mitzvah. No, this Gemara holds. There's no fulfilling of the mitzvah once as a boy and girl. There'll be no growth in population if there's only one boy, one girl. Therefore, according to the Yavetz's first answer, this Gemara is going to learn, like the Gemara over here, which is hard to know if that's actually what the Gemara says there, but he learns in the Gemara that it means when he says always have children, not always because you don't know Musa-wise, who will be successful? No, it's an obligation. The obligation is to produce as many children as possible, growth population, and or you never know what will be. We said last week that if a child is sterile or a child passes away, that child doesn't count. So you have as many as possible. So statistically, you're in a better position to fulfill the mitzvah. So the reason why we brought down, to answer your question, we rule today, boy and girl. That's the rule. There is a rabbi in the Gemara, it says what you're saying. We rule today, boy and a girl. Now, so a wild idea. We said
Rabbi, there's no indication here what Dina's attitude was.
About what?
The whole thing. Maybe she wanted to be the guy's wife.
You talk about being kidnapped or about the mitzvah of Puruvu?
No, neither. I mean, about her being rescued. About their killing all of the people there.
Oh, okay. Okay, that, well, you know what? Maybe in a couple of weeks we'll get back to it. At the end of the story, Dina produces a child, and that child marries Yosef. So if I remember, maybe in a couple of weeks we can get that. The Midrashim talk about this. It is a question. What was Dina's reaction on her saviors? What was the game plan here? According to some, she told her brothers, thank you, but now that I'm unmarriageable, you got to figure this out and get me married. Because they would have stayed married to me. But it had to know if she meant that once they converted, once they didn't convert, it had to know. Now, we said last week, the brothers only, fathers, forefathers, only fulfilled the mitzvahs when in Israel proper. When not in Israel proper, they did not fulfill the mitzvahs. I saw a wild interpretation. One wants to say that when they were not in Israel proper, Yaakov's marrying sisters, not legal in Torah law, halachically not permitted, when he married those sisters, he wasn't going as a Jew, he was going as non-Torah law. And therefore, well, the kids produced were not considered Jewish kids. But when he enters into Israel, now they might be going through a conversion process, and now God has to tell them, by the way, Puruvu doesn't mean physically now produce children, doesn't have to physically produce children. He has 11 children, but you got to convert them in order to count them. If a non-Jew, you weren't here last week, if a non-Jew has kids as a non-Jew, legal, and then decides to convert, now he's obligated to much more mitzvahs, 600 plus new mitzvahs on the game. What about Puruvu? What about his non-Jewish kids? Do they count? So the Rambam says they will count if they convert as well. So therefore, Yaakov now is coming into Israel. because it will be a good explanation to why Yaakov's saying it now, why God's saying it now. We asked right away, why is God, we said world war, why is God now saying Puruvu? So according to this answer, it's cute. Do you know why he's saying now Puruvu? Because until now, they didn't fulfill the obligation because those kids were marrying sisters. That means you're not going in Jewish law. You're not looking at those kids as Jewish kids. Very interesting idea that the Shvatim, for many years, were not considered Jewish kids until they moved to Eretz Yisrael as well, based on Yaakov not keeping the laws, and therefore the foremothers, that's the word, were not considered, the matriarchs were not considered Jewish mothers because they were living outside of Israel. If there's a lot of things putting together here, but it's a fascinating idea. When outside of Israel, not only did they not observe the laws of Jews, they didn't consider themselves Jews. So if the mothers weren't considered Jews, children were not Jewish. You enter now, it's all, you got to fulfill the mitzvah. So right now it was brought down. And when then it would mean, when Yaakov in the beginning of the parasha is saying, I didn't fulfill Puruvu, he's not lying. Our minor question is, he didn't fulfill anything when he was not in Israel. So why are you specifying too? You have to figure out what he was thinking to get Esav on the side. But it means he did not keep anything outside of Eretz Yisrael, or he wasn't obligated to, this is the answer we're going to say. He wasn't obligated to keep everything outside. You can look at the bigger picture. So when he was outside of Eretz Yisrael, maybe he fasted on Yom Kippur. Why not? But to marry two sisters, which can't be done, he realized it had to be done. So he took the bigger picture and did it. But as far as the bigger picture, they don't have to be considered Jews for that. I can wait until they convert later on. I went a little quick with that. I hope we got it. Otherwise, watch it again and watch it again.
Rabbi, how was Ben Yomin Jewish?
Ben Yomin was the only one born in Israel.
Yes, but was his mother Jewish?
Oh, as they entered in, there's an automatic conversion. So
automatic conversion.
I'm not sure if the pregnancy was as a Jew, which is a great question we discussed 20 years ago, Stephen, with IVF, if you remember. If a mother converts while she's pregnant, does the child who was conceived as a non-Jew require conversion? Or when does the child count? By inception or by coming out? That was a question we had at length years and years and years ago. So if we go, we pretty much rule this way, that it goes by birthing day,
when it's actually physically
coming out. So you could say that Rachel and the mothers were, even if she was conceived, outside of Israel, fine. But as soon as she had Israel, she converted. All the boys converted. And now Binyamin comes out, he does not need a conversion. That's what possibility you could do. Possibility. Now for the wild idea, which might get cut out of the screen. Everything I'm saying right now, we will give up to the people in charge. They might cut this out. It's a little wild, what I'm about to tell you. Hold on to your hat, Bill. Hold on to the hat. Now, this is very wild. Stephen, get on for the ride. Bodenheim's there? Okay. We know that the story goes that Leah had six children, and then she was pregnant. And she realized, based on prophecy, that if she has the boy, Rachel's out. Rachel will have the least, only one available, not going through the mathematical equation. And therefore, she davened, I don't want a boy. I want a girl. And Yosef, what would have been Yosef, turned into Dina. Multiple ways to learn. Yosef was Dina, and Dina was Yosef. There was a body switch, whatever that exactly means, we're not going into right this second, possibly. There was a body switch, and they became other people. And we said, which got chuckles years ago, but it's an Alshech, that's 1500s, has smicha for the Beis Yosef, do not mess. He says that because of that, Dina had certain male characteristics. She came out of the womb as a girl, but she went into the field like a guy. She had to use the phrase America tomboyish. And Yosef, on the other hand, who would have been a girl, we talk about him always combing his hair. They had certain, and by the way, you look through the Chumash, a lot of these things Alshech brings out. Some of Dina's things were male characteristics, and some of Yosef's characteristics might have been female.
Spirituality,
and masculinity, like that type of stuff. So
personality traits.
Now I will tell you this: I saw a rabbi. Just going to quote it. You decide. That says like this: in order to fulfill the mitzvah properly, you need to have a boy and a girl. But what that means, you need to have a 100% boy and a 100% girl. If you have an androgynous kid, it's a possibility, but it becomes a debate. You count it as a boy, as a girl. There are androgynous people out there. Androgynous is someone born with multiple parts. And that happens. It's, again, not I found it every day. Yes. So now, he wants to say this, Rabbi, wild. He wants to say that since Dina had a lot of male personality traits. Therefore, she could not be counted as a girl. Really? Could not be counted as a... And Yosef doesn't count either. Both of them couldn't be counted as a girl. And therefore, they only had boys. So yeah, Yaakov can confidently say, I did not fulfill the mitzvah. In order to fulfill the mitzvah properly, you need a boy and a girl. I only have boys. Or I have this girl, but she's in between. Yosef's in between. I don't need Yosef. I have enough boys. You only need one boy. So by the second boy, right there, I don't want to say they don't count, but they don't count. We don't need them. So what he was saying was, when Yaakov was saying at the beginning of the parasha, I did not fulfill the mitzvah, he was not lying. Technical mitzvah, he did not fulfill. And when God comes down and tells him to fulfill the mitzvah, because he did not fulfill it yet, there is a command to do so right now, because he had not fulfilled it yet.
The rabbi, she could still procreate, you know. So,
so the Michas Chinuch, you have not been here long enough to know what that sefer means. Hold your head in shame. I'll have to say that on camera. But the Michas Chinuch, this says, how do you define, but no, I'm making a joke, but how do you define whether the child's a male or a female, as far as the gender, as far as for the mitzvah for the parents to fulfill Puruhu, he proves it from several Talmud passages. Depends how that child can give birth. So if you have this androgynous child, it would depend how they can produce. And if they can produce both ways, it becomes a question. Because some, I don't know if it's reality possible. He discussed if it's possible. I don't know if it's possible.
Dina gives birth 100%.
What?
Dina 100% gives birth to Hasna.
So Dina would have, in the end, later on, would have counted.
Retroactively, it counts.
Right.
When she gives birth, it's like, oh, it's 100% a woman.
Right. The birthing process would prove what they can be. But it's not everyone, it's not clear that it gets, he's talking about, we're talking about right now the mitzvah approval. How do the parents count the mitzvah? It's based not on the child's gender. Well, yes, on the child's gender. How do we know what the gender is? By who could be proven what they gave birth to? That Michas Chinuch is mainly accepted, but there are other people who come up with other ideas. And clearly, in today's political climate, we're not going to discuss that. We will go next week.
Rabbi, question for you.
Yes, Stephen.
With Dina, was there any suggestion Stephen, that she was...
Yes, Stephen, sorry.
That she was androgynous?
Who?
Dina.
It does not say that. It just said she had male character, mayor, what was the word you not character?
Male personality.
Personality traits.
Outgoing. It said she took out after her mother when she went out.
That's one metric. That's a Rashi and a metric, correct. Now, also from the 1500s, he explains that it came from not just taking after her mother. He's explaining as a mother's prayer that switched it. Her mother's prayer that switched it. I don't be saying this exactly what I'm saying. But her almost being a boy at one point in theoretical ideas had some
spiritual repercussions.
Personality traits I like a lot. At least we get a good chuckle out of Michael sometimes. Next one. Good point. We go further next week, probably still on Peru, somehow on the parish. This is a lot. We did a lot here. Thank you, Chasson.
Thank you.